My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am joined this week, midweek, not our usual recording time, but I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, happy middle of the week.
Happy middle of the week. Maybe depending on when this comes out, happy hump day, everybody.
That is right. We are dropping this a little bit late because of some scheduling issues, but we wanted so badly to talk about Tokyo Joshi's Grand Princess, which we will be covering in detail on this episode, as well as many other shows that have happened and will be happening in the world of Joshi. But before we jump into that, we got to do the plugs. Follow us on Twitter at JBombAudio. Earlier this week, we did some tweeting. I tweeted out a preview that I did of Grand Princess along with a number of other illustrious wrestling minds. So check that out. And you can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly. And you can follow me at Tay Mambo on Twitter. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice happens to be Apple Podcasts, we would love a 5-star rating and review. It would really help us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. Kelly, let's get right into it. I feel it. The energy is different here.
Feel it.
Recording. So let's talk about Tokyo Joshi's Grand Princess 23 that happened on March 18th at the Ariake Coliseum in front of 1,513 fans. Kelly, what'd you think about the show overall?
I liked it. It's a weird show in that it is both a very good show that I really enjoyed and also a slight disappointment because there wasn't like a match of the year candidate on it.
I can see that. I was stronger than you in that I felt that this show, partially for, well, not reasons out of their control, but I thought that the show was a fairly large disappointment to me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I thought that if you, you know, we previewed the show on the last episode, but if you had sort of asked me, you know, the floor for each match and the ceiling for each match, I think pretty much all the matches except for one, which we'll talk about in a bit, were much closer to their floor than their ceiling.
I can see that. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of notebook matches in this one. I had a lot of mid, like, three and a half star range stuff.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where maybe if there had been one more match that really delivered, I would feel differently. There really wasn't any match. You know, on the last few big shows, I've had usually a match in the undercard. A lot of the Ryo Mizunami matches that I've really enjoyed that have sort of been like, oh, surprises on the undercard. And I felt like that didn't happen this time. So there was a lot of weight on the top of the card. And some of the top of the card was good, and some of the top of the card was not as good to me. But as I've said, and as I've repeated, you know, the stakes are always higher.
Yep.
With Tokyo Joshi, this was their biggest show. And I think one thing we'll talk about, because it's not really specific to one match, although I noticed it more in other matches than some others, I thought it was a fairly poor crowd.
Yeah, the crowd was not great.
I think, sort of in hindsight, you know, hindsight is 20/20. It was a big show. You know, they drew 1,500 fans. I know that they did sell out multiple sections of the venue, but in a venue that seats, I believe, 10,000 is the full capacity to sort of draw 1,500. And the other thing I didn't really like was they left the lights on the whole show. And so I spent a lot of the beginning of the show staring into the crowd, and I know everyone was sort of COVID distanced, but it looked to me like an empty build, like an empty building.
It looked very empty.
And it was one of those things where it was like, there were times when you couldn't hear the crowd and you're looking at a crowd that just visually looks pretty empty. And it's just one of those things where it's sort of like, you know, this isn't really giving me a lot of energy and excitement about what I'm watching.
Yeah, they probably got a little bit too ambitious with the size of the building they ran for this.
And I think it would have been even fine if it were, you know, 1,500 and they were all sitting next to each other closer. Because then I think the sound probably would have been better. But there were moments when, you know, two people are wrestling and it's like absolutely silent.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, this is supposed to be the biggest show in this company's history. And I don't really think at any point in this show, I thought, oh my God, this is the biggest show they've ever done. It's so much bigger than, you know, like any of their other big shows. Because even those that were in smaller, like Tokyo Dome, City Hall, even though those are smaller venues, it's like, yeah, they fit 1,100 people into a 1,200 seat venue or whatever, where you're like, okay, the energy is in the room, people are excited, you can hear them. And so it just felt really different to me.
Yeah, it definitely felt like the building swallowed up a lot of the sound.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get into the individual matches, starting out with a singles match, one of three. You could say partners explode match here. It was Daisy Monkey exploding Suzume, defeating Arisa Endo in 8 minutes and 48 seconds. Kelly, what do you think of this opening match of the evening?
I thought this was very good. Especially, I thought Endo looked great here. I thought she had a very good performance. And that camel clutch she like locked in on Suzume might be one of the best looking one of those I've ever seen. Like, she just wrenched back. It looked brutal. I kind of thought she was going to win with that. But yeah, overall, really good match. And Suzume's got cool new gear. I went 3.5 stars on this one.
I like this one as well. This was one of the matches that I previewed in the big preview I talked about that I retweeted on Twitter. I was excited for this. It was the opener, so, you know, wasn't going to be anything too crazy. But I think that these are, as I've mentioned for both of them individually before, two of my favorites in the company and two of the people who I think have the most potential. And I think they went out and had a really good match. Wasn't, you know, overwhelming. Wasn't like a go out of your way, you have to see this. But I thought was very good. And as I mentioned in my preview, and I still think, you know, it is the case, I think as these two move up the card, I think they're going to be important players as they move forward. So this may be sort of that beginning of the road match that people come back to and look at as like, oh, look how far they've come. What are they going to, you know, call back to? You know, sometimes wrestlers like to call back to matches if they've had them before. I could see them doing that. But yeah, two great wrestlers, a lot of new gear on this show, which we will talk about coming up, as I'm sure people expect from us, Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
The next match was an 8-person tag team match filled with all the new rookies. It was the team of Himawari, Mihiro Kiryu, Shino Suzuki, and Wakano Uehara defeating Haru Kazushiro, Kaya Torabami, Runa Okuba, and Toga in 11 minutes and 23 seconds. Kelly, a lot of new faces to yes. talk about. Some brand new, some relatively new, and even the veterans. Still pretty new here.
Yeah. out of everyone in this match, I'm putting all my stock into Toga.
Yes, I have a very similar note, which is, you know, we had talked about Toga debuting on that March 6th show, sort of why is she debuting? And it's, I wrote in my notes, it's clear she debuted first because she's the best one.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, she's now, just like a grumpy shit kicker, and I am a fan.
Now, of course, two of these rookies are essentially children.
Babies. They're babies.
Yes. Wrestlers. So, you know, it's sort of hard to go out and be like, okay, let's really analyze the, you know, the work here. I thought that they were both, you know, they were first match rookies. They looked very passable. It was not a match, shockingly, considering the way it was, you know, the people in it. It really at no point fell apart in any way.
No.
Worked very well. It was, you know, they got through it. Everyone, you know, not everything was like, oh my god, what an amazing action I'm seeing. But I thought they did very well to sort of get through it. Everyone got a little moment of action for themselves. So yeah, I mean, you can't really complain. It's a little bit difficult, you know, in a match with five people just debuting to sort of be like, okay, this person's getting featured. So it will be interesting to see moving forward as they get more individual focus, sort of how our thoughts change.
Yeah. Yeah. I meant to watch it and I totally spaced on it. I need to watch Toga's actual debut match against Miyu, because that's probably pretty good.
Yeah, she's a big hitter, and she had that the great elbow to Kiryu's face, which I think maybe was one of the first times that in the show that Shota on commentary went, hell yeah.
Yeah.
which he did a number of times throughout the show. I found the English commentary, which was Chris Brooks and Shota, I found it very charming in a way. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion of like mid-2000s era SmackDown talent.
Yes. Shota loves that stuff, apparently.
With Shota being like, oh, this is what Taz says. This is what Taz says.
The thing that stuck out most to me was when he shouted out the Hell's Gate, which is a move name I have not heard in quite some time.
Yeah. when it sort of first started, I was like, okay, is this going to be, should I just switch to Japanese? And I was like, I'll just keep on the English. And I ended up very much enjoying it. I think Brooks has gotten very good. You know, having worked now with Aki and Drew Parker and now Shota and all the other people that they brought in, I think he's gotten very good at sort of steering the conversation the way he wants it to go, like the way it needs to go, regardless of what the other person sort of is saying.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't always like, oh, Shota is really helping here. It was just sort of sometimes like, here's my thought. And Chris would be like, okay, this is related because it, you know, goes, you know, from here to here, and that's a connection to the match. And so that was sort of something that stuck out to me. That's a sort of separate overall commentary note. But yeah, the memory of Shota's many hell yeahs on commentary. I will also say about this match, I thought Kaya Toribami looked very good.
Now, yeah, she did.
You know, in there with a lot of very fresh talent, but I think that she's looked very good. She's sort of added more of these athletic moves, and I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do with her, because it doesn't seem like she is moving up very fast. I know that there's some things outside of the ring that she does. So I don't know if the company's just sort of waiting. But I think she's very good, and she really surprised me here. You know, I thought she would just go in and sort of guide the rookies through and get them through, but I thought she had a moment for herself to shine.
Yeah, no, I think everyone came out looking about as good as they possibly could at this point. Like, the babies are very much babies. They need a lot of work, I think, but they'll get there. Toga really impressed me. I thought Uehara looked great. Shino Suzuki didn't stand out much to me, but like, she wasn't bad, so I can't say anything about that. And then I thought Kiryu and Toribami both did really well to kind of guide the ship and get their own stuff in too.
I wrote, my one big note was that none of the rookies blew me away. Probably the closest would have been Toga, you know, and they had moments where they looked very green, but they all, I figured at one point or another, and it may have been a very brief moment, there was some sort of potential there where I was like, oh, that's interesting that they do that, or, oh, that looked good. And it's sort of good that they all have that, as opposed to someone who you're like, okay, this person is not very good and I don't really have anything to hook onto. Because also I think that these are going to be more, well, maybe not Shino because she's already in the up girls, but sort of more traditional rookies in the sense, as opposed to someone like Yuki Arai, who sort of came in and was like, you're young, but you are more important than someone who's going to sort of sit here and just run matches.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the card. So
the
I think
people care about you.
Yeah. I think it's good that I was like, okay, there's something there to sort of hook into and follow, because it's not going to be provided necessarily by the company, if that makes sense. Sort of like, oh yes, this is sort of the traditional way that it happens, although it hasn't really, that hasn't been the way Tokyo Joshi has done it in the last year or so, but it's the way that they did it with many, you know, Miyu Watanabe and Suzume and people like that. So yeah, very interesting. The next match was a 6-person tag team match. The trio of Free Wi-Fi, Hikari Noah, and now Kakuta, joined by Ram Kaichou, defeated Palm Harajuku, Raku, and Yuki Aino in 10 minutes and 23 seconds. I do have to say, my first note about this match is also a Shota note. When in the beginning of the match, Raku was doing all of her sleep stuff, Shota very quietly whispering on commentary, this is her strategy. really made me laugh. This was a match. I thought it was a decent match. I liked Yuki's new gear, another new gear moment. And I thought Free Wi-Fi's finisher looked pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, solid match. Got some Raku and Rom lore. I guess their marriage isn't doing well. We'll see how things go from here. But overall, yeah, solid enough match.
Yeah, supposedly I saw a picture where Palm made Ram apologize backstage. So I think that's the latest plot point in the saga of... Raku made Ram apologize backstage. That's the latest in the lore of this marriage that's now on the rocks.
I hope those crazy kids can make it work.
The next match saw the return of Ryo Mizunami, who took on Moka Miyamoto, defeating her in 11 minutes and 46 seconds. I have to say, I was very hopeful. The first couple matches, I'm seeing rookies, seeing lots of new gear with rookies. Suzume bringing out some new gear, you know, Yuki Aino debuting a brand new look, and I thought, this is the moment. Moka is going to do it. She's going to have new gear, and she came out with the same exact gear she always has. And let me tell you, this match proved us right about the gear, because every time she got knocked over, that skirt went up into her face.
Yep.
And then the whole match, that frickin' bow was hanging on her hair. And all I wanted to happen, because look, speaking of the match, I actually really enjoyed the match. I thought Moka looked good. I thought she showed like a really fierce attitude.
She showed really great fire in here.
Yeah, good fire. That was also in my notes. And all I wanted her to do with that bow, you know, it's dangling in her hair. It's like almost in front of her face. I wanted her to take it and rip it out of her hair and throw it on the ground and be like, come at me or something. Like, just because that would solve the problem, because the bow was like flopping around the whole match, which sort of just was distracting. But then I'm like, she is sort of in this attitude of like, I'm ready for a fight. I'm going to fight you. Like, let's go. And it was just the bow. I'm like, just get rid of it. Just like rip it out and throw it to the side. But yeah, I think we're in agreement that I thought Moka actually looked good. I don't know that this was the best of the Ryo challenge series, whatever you want to call it, but I think it was definitely a very good showing for Moka.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match, but also not as good as I was hoping. Like, I went 3.5 stars. I was hoping for a little bit more out of these two. I thought, I don't want to say Mizunami phoned it in, but like, she didn't seem as dynamic as she had in the previous matches. This was missing something, and I can't really put my finger on what it was. But I will say, Mizunami absolutely just squashed Moka with that leg drop at the end. Like, she hit her and bounced.
Yeah, I think this is sort of what I was expecting. We talked about this last episode, and we'll talk about another thing in a few minutes. That I think you're slightly higher on Moka in ring than I am. So I sort of saw it as like, oh, she did pretty good. And because you're like, oh, she's better than I sort of where I am. Maybe that's where sort of the disappointment came from, where I was sort of like, oh, this is pretty good. I'm sort of surprised. Like the battle of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see. We don't know exactly how long Jury is going to be out. But it would sort of be cool to come back if Moka sort of could keep that fire from this match and like bring it back with Juria, who sort of already has that energy to her, that sort of very stern, like, hi-ya, you know, because they are karate people.
Yes.
Energy. So, a good showing. I mean, one of my, I would say at least a match in the sort of top half of the show for me in terms of my enjoyment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
The next match was our classic Big Show match, a tag team match, the usual team of Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima managing to defeat Andreza Giant Panda and Haruna Neko in 10 minutes and 25 seconds. Kelly, what did you think of the return of Andreza Giant Panda to Tokyo Joshi?
Well, first, I got a shout out to Nakajima for using the Mazer Cannon against Andreza as they're making their way to the ring. I was very impressed by that. Love to see a good Mazer Cannon. For those that don't know what a Mazer Cannon is, it is, you'd see it in a lot of Showa era Godzilla movies, stuff like that, Toho movies. First appeared in 1966's War of the Gargantuas. It's just like a fantasy laser gun cannon thing. And to see that used in a wrestling match brought a tear to my eye. And they didn't hurt any monster toys in this one, so that made me happy too. But yeah, what a stupid, dumb match. I loved it. Just what a stupid fucking match this was. They beat the shit out of that poor panda. Misao ran it over with a bike and then shoved a lightsaber in its ass. This is great. 3.5 stars.
Not a lightsaber. A light, whatever they were calling it on commentary.
That's true,
Chris,
yeah.
Chris Brooks desperately tried to get them not sued by Disney.
Yeah, that's very true.
I really like that. I always find it funny that, like, Andreza is this giant inflatable thing, and yet when he headbutts people, I am sort of like, "Ooh, God!"
Yes, it's so violent.
It looks like crazy. I guess I don't know what makes it look that way. Maybe the sound or something. But like every time, I was like, "Dang!"
Yeah, every time it looks like one of the most brutal shoot headbutts you've ever seen.
Yeah, and I was also confused at one point in that I think it was Hyper Masao was trying to like put the light tube inside of Andreza.
She was trying to shove it in its ass.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's 100% what was happening.
And then of course the bike came out, the classic bike. But I wrote a good strategy overall by Masao and Shoko, and it won them the match.
Yeah.
What do you know? But yeah, we always say this with these, you know, Hyper Masao matches. It's like very funny. And then there's like not really that much more to say. You're like, I had a good time and it was very funny. Chris Brooks and Shota were clearly having a lot of fun on commentary. With Shota making all his references to kaiju movies. I also like the opening of the match with Andreza very calmly making his way down to the ring, waving to people as his partner is getting the shit beat out of her in the ring.
He didn't care.
When they shoot the cannon is he like, wait a minute, now I got to do something.
Yeah.
The next match was another tag team match. The returning team, Neo Bushiki Goon, the team of Saki Sama and Mei San Michelle, defeating the Odd Couple team of Yuki Kamifuku and Billy Starks in 13 minutes and 42 seconds. And boy, let me tell you, I'm glad we're not on this show talking about how Billy Starks broke her neck trying to dive onto Mei Suruga.
That was scary.
I was like, good Lord, how, like, you want to do a dive to the outside? Okay, you should do it with Saki, not with Mei. It's like you're twice her size and you're asking her to catch you going very fast towards the ground.
Yeah, that was really scary. I was surprised she finished the match. Like, I thought she was just going to be out.
I think she ended up okay because I think she landed mostly on the back of her neck or like the top of her back. But in the moment, I was like, oh God, like that was very scary looking. My main note about this was I really enjoyed this, even though I thought it wasn't that good. And I literally wrote it like that in my notes with the question mark. It was just a thing where it sort of ended and I was like, oh, I had a good time, but I don't know. I mean, I always like seeing Neo Bushikigun. The Trey bit actually got me this time. Usually May like waves it around and is like, I'm going to put it on the ground. And you're like, okay, someone's going to slip on it. This time when Billy slipped on it, I hadn't realized May had put it down and I thought Billy just fell over. And then they were like, oh, got her with the tray. And I was like, oh, of course, the classic tray. So, yeah, Kelly, did you enjoy this match?
I liked it. I mean, it's always a blessed day when we get to see Neo Bushikigun wrestle. More than anything, I was surprised to see Kamiyu take the fall. I was not expecting that at all.
I had that in my notes also, shocked that she would lose instead of Billy.
Yeah, like, it made me wonder if they quick called an audible because they thought that Billy was in rough shape or something after the fall. So they're just like, change things real fast. But I don't know. Maybe they've got big plans for Billy. Who knows?
I mean, she will be on that LA show.
That's true. Yeah. I have in my notes saying that Saki-sama's exchanges with Kamiyu felt very reminiscent of Kamiyu's exchanges with Saki Akai last year. I think that was like the lot of boots. So very, very similar to those, the tag match for the titles last year. I thought everyone did pretty well and put on a solid match. That's another like 3.5 stars to me.
It's another like Billy Starks match as someone who hasn't seen a lot of her in America that I'm like, oh yeah, she is. Like, I think there is something there. This sort of continues the tradition of one move where I'm like, because there was that weird move during the Yuka title match where I was like, oh, and then it sort of wasn't an issue, I guess. But yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, the people who really love her here are like, she's the greatest to ever do it. And it's like, she's very good, but also she's essentially still a child.
Mm-hmm. Like, and Billy's still at that age where she can take falls like that. And it's okay because she's still pretty much a kid and they're made of gum. So she's going to be fine. But once she gets older, she's going to have to tone things down a little bit and be a little bit more careful.
The next match was a singles match, the last non-title singles match of the night. Aja Kong returning to Tokyo Joshi, defeating Yuki Arai in 13 minutes even. I thought that this took a long while to get going. I thought the last few minutes were really strong. I liked that Yuki got close to winning but didn't win instead of it just being like the usual Aja Kong squash. My biggest issue was Yuki Arai's offense to me still looks like paper soft.
Yeah. I think, like, as the match went on, she started to lay in the axe kicks a little bit more because I think she realized she had to when you're against Aja Kong, but a lot of her stuff still looked real soft.
Like, even the lockup at the beginning of the match, the difference between this match and the next match, both started with a lockup, as many matches do. The difference in how they felt between the two matches was night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Yuki Arai's lockup is like, okay, I'm going to sort of lightly put my arms around you, and we're doing it. You know, the strikes are very... And I'm like, of all the people who you can get in the ring with and sort of, like, lay it in, I'm like, that's Aja... you can do it with Aja Kong. Like, yeah. Just hit her really hard, and she'll be okay. And it just felt like the strikes are just, like, sort of, like, very soft. And it just takes away from sort of my enjoyment when I'm like, this doesn't even look like you would knock over anything with what you're doing.
I think if this match happened a year ago before Aja Kong took her time off, it would have ended up being very bad. Because Aja Kong carried this match and made Yuki Arai look pretty good and gave her a ton in this match. I mean, she almost lost with the count out. Like, that's huge to give that up to Arai. So I think if Kong hadn't been as healthy as she is now, this could have been a very bad match.
And I think it's one of those things where, you know, they put the tag titles on Arai with Arai and Akai, and I think that sort of hid some of her faults, because she could sort of come in, do a couple things, and then get out, whereas this feels much more like a little bit exposed.
Mm-hmm.
On, you know, what the skill level is. You know, it's also a question of, like, you know, she's in SKE 48. I know SKE 48 is very big, but she's in sort of a featured match here. I haven't seen anything, and I haven't looked into this, like, in laser focused detail, but there's nothing to me that's like, wow, SKE 48 fans are, like, turning out in droves to see her, and she's been usually pretty featured.
Yeah, like, it seems the fans are willing to vote for her in, like, wrestler of the year polls or whatever, but doesn't seem like they're super willing to buy tickets.
And maybe they're just like, oh, I'll just stream it. You know, I don't know. I don't really know anything about the makeup of the fan base of SKE 48. Yeah. It just seems to me like the whole thing was like, whoa, she is a star, and I know SKE 48 is a big deal, but it just doesn't seem to translate. And especially now that it's sort of like, you still do sort of look like a rookie. Like, I was like, oh, these strikes that you're giving are sort of like the strikes that Haru and Runa were giving in the opening rookie match.
Yeah. So I think this goes to my theory from that I posited was either last time or whatever, some recent episode. I think Mocha is better in ring than Yuki Arai.
I was going to bring that up because I think now, and maybe because I had it on my mind after we talked about it recently and with this match, but I agree.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I liked the Aja Kong Yuki Arai match more. But I think Mocha's performance was far better than Arai's performance was. Arai was wholly carried by Aja Kong.
The next match was our first of three title matches, the International Princess title match, Rika Tatsumi becoming the first ever Tokyo Joshi Grand Slam champion, having won every title in Tokyo Joshi, defeating the champion Miyu Watanabe in 18 minutes and 31 seconds. I thought that this was by far the match of the night for me. I loved it. Another excellent performance, an unbelievable performance by Miyu Watanabe. Well, Kelly, I'll let you go first and give your thoughts. I have a major question about this match.
Okay. I thought this was very good. At the same time, I was very sad to see Miyu lose, because I've been really enjoying her title run. And just, it was a great match. I thought Rika wrestled a really nasty match, and she had to use pretty much every trick in her book to pull out the win here. And I liked that she didn't handily beat Miyu. It was kind of just like, look, she used her experience edge and eventually pulled it out. Of course, we got to talk about the Dragon Sleeper swing. That was one of the craziest spots I've ever seen. And I kind of was, when that happened, I was kind of hoping that was the finish. Because holy hell, if you just have like someone pass out and the ref calls for the bell while they're doing that, that would be awesome. That's an incredible finish. I hope they kind of keep that in their back pocket for maybe a rematch between these two down the road. It was a great match. I don't think it was my favorite of the show. It was incredibly close. I went 4.25 on this one.
I had the same note. I literally wrote in my notes, Miyu is unbelievable, and then wrote the deadlift into the Dragon Sleeper swing, which looked crazy.
Insane.
And she had a couple moments when she just like lifted Rika up and did something with her where I was like, holy moly. The thing to me was, and you sort of already talked about it, was in the middle or closer to the end, I thought, oh my God, Miyu feels like a superstar.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
And I was like, she looks so good. She's wrestling really well. She has really good facial expressions when she's selling. You can like really get behind her. And then she lost. And it was sort of like all those thoughts that I had where I was like, she's a huge star. Like, it's happening. It's happening. And then I was like,
it was the allure of the Grand Slam was too much for him.
And I don't know what happens. You know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe
shit, maybe she takes the belt off of Mizuki.
Yeah, maybe that's a thing. So I don't know. I'm not vehemently opposed to this. I think it's sort of a cool story of Rika winning the Grand Slam to sort of give Rika that accomplishment when maybe she isn't floating around the Princess of Princess title scene. It just sort of felt in the moment like, oh my God, a young star, like this is so good. And then they sort of lose and you don't know what's coming next. It very well may be that they totally nail it and she goes and she wins the Princess of Princess title and she becomes a huge, gigantic star. And I'm sitting here saying, well, they were totally right to do that. It's equally as possible they spend the next 3 years, you know, giving her Princess of Princess title matches that she loses over and over again, like we saw with Mizuki.
Yeah.
You know, where in 5 years we think, geez, she hasn't really done as much as we hoped. And we'll talk more about sort of that stuff later. But I don't want this to take away from the match. I also went 4.25 stars. I just thought it was great. I just think Miyu is, you know, one of those people where I think some people are going to have sort of the barrier to entry with Miyu, which is sort of, you know, she wears all pink gear and she comes out and she does the LOVE hand signs, which to me are great. I love those things, but I know that there's people out there who look at that and go, oh, you know, this is not manly enough for my wrestling and it needs to be cool. Because I'm like, the minute she gets in the ring, she's so good that I know that people would be like, whoa, like show people that deadlift Dragon Sleeper swing spot. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And she, when she does that swing, like I love Claudio Castagnoli. I think he's great. He's one of my favorites. But when Miyu is doing that swing, she whips those people around.
The speed she gets is incredible.
Like, it is a swing and it is a believable move where you're like, yes, this seems very dangerous. in a way that someone like Claudio, like the giant swing is fun, but it never really feels like, oh shit, this is like a big move. And the way that Miyu gets into hers are just great. So yeah, my fingers are crossed that this is a next step up instead of a step back for me.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. No, that's it. Cause yeah, it was one of those, the match ended and you're just like, oh shit. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's sort of a bummer.
Such a good match.
And I like Rika. It's not like I'm like, like Rika, she stinks. Oh God. Yeah. Like she's going to have great matches. It's just, it's the first thing that feels sort of like, well, I guess she lost in the finals, but it's the first thing that sort of feels like, uh-oh, like this is not up, up, up. Like we're not moving in the same direction, but maybe we are. Don't know. We will see.
Yep. We'll find out.
The next match, our semi-main of the evening, was for the Princess Tag Team titles. The duo of 1-2-1 million, Maki Ito and Miyu Yamashita, defeating the Wasteland War Party of Heidi Howitzer and Max the Impaler in 13 minutes and 42 seconds. Our second title change of the evening. This a match that, to me, I thought parts of it were good. I thought Miyu looked good, but it never seemed to get to that next gear for me. There were moments when it just seemed a bit out of sorts with everyone. I think part of that is two very tiny wrestlers wrestling with two very big wrestlers and having to have it be sort of, instead of the usual of like the big wrestlers just do all their big shit. It's like, no, these two teams have to be even. And, you know, it just didn't quite click. Like, Miyu hit the great head kick and then went for the skull kick and just couldn't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, this match didn't work super well for me. I thought it was fine. Nothing really memorable about it to me. I'm curious to see if the post-match of Max just shoving down Heidi, if that means that Heidi's just on her way out and Max is going to go solo and that's why they dropped the belts, or who knows?
Well, I know they're on the LA show.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting idea that I had not thought of before you started speaking about this. What about, well, I don't know who else they would bring in. I was just thinking, everything about me is focused on Palm Harajuku beating Max.
Yep.
So what if they did like Heidi and Palm versus Max and someone else?
Haru and Aneko. Or, Yuki Aino, her friend. Yeah. There we go.
I don't know. I feel like Heidi and Max would be sort of like Heidi versus Max would be sort of an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if people in Japan would be interested in it, but it's sort of interesting to bring in two, you know, outside wrestlers and have them fight each other, and it would be sort of two big wrestlers. I don't know if they would do that either, but yeah, it could be them. I didn't even consider that it was maybe a write-off for Heidi, but I think maybe we'll,
because it was more that they made sure to show it that kind of told me like, oh, this seems like there's something to this. It didn't seem like just kind of an off-the-cuff thing Max did.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed like the focus, because then Chris, I think, brought it up like two or three times, and I was like, okay, clearly they wanted us to. I mean, I don't know if Chris is getting notes from anyone, but it seemed like a thing that was being emphasized. I just took it sort of as, oh, this is going to be another step in whatever story this is, as opposed to like, oh, Heidi's leaving. I guess because I was thinking of LA, they'll both be on LA, so I was like, okay, they've got at least one more show.
Yeah.
So you would think, like, maybe there, I don't remember who they're facing in LA. I don't have it in front of me, but maybe there, that's how you give them a loss, because they start fighting in the middle of the match or something.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good way to do it.
The main event of the show was the big Princess of Princess title match, the two members of the Magical Sugar Rabbits facing off, Mizuki defeating Yuka Sakazaki to finally win the Princess of Princess title in 21 minutes and 2 seconds, our third consecutive title change. on the evening. And Kelly, I will let you go first.
Okay. I liked this match quite a bit. I think Yuka is on just an incredible hot streak right now and might be one of the very best in the world at the moment. So in that regard, I was kind of sad to see her lose because I'm really enjoying this reign. But you know what? Mizuki finally gets the win. That's cool. I'm happy for her. I really like the weird vibe that Terminator Yuka matches have. Because this one was like, anytime she takes control, and I know we talked about the crowd being shitty earlier, but anytime she takes control, the crowd just goes silent, waiting for whatever disgusting strike that Yuka is going to hit Mizuki with next. And then it's immediately followed by, oh! So it's just got like such a strange vibe to these matches. Like people seem to feel uncomfortable, and I really like that. I think that's very cool. I'm hoping that Yuka picks up the Ring of Honor title, that from Athena. I think that would be very cool, and maybe she could bring some of this Terminator Yuka energy over to Ring of Honor. But yeah, like Mizuki fought her heart out and did everything she could to survive and just barely won. The ending of the match, I thought, fell a little flat. But other than that, I really loved this. I went 4.5 stars.
All right. So I have a lot of thoughts on this match.
Okay.
The first one is, there was sort of the idea of Yuka coming out. It's like their partners fighting each other. And Yuka sort of having the attitude of like, I don't really want to fight you, but, you know, eventually being like, I guess if we're going to fight, I'm just going to beat the shit out of you. Which I like in principle. The only problem to me was it isn't the first time they've fought. Like, what is the reticence here from Yuka that, like, it almost feels to me like this should have been the attitude in the first match, you know, 2 years ago. Where she comes in and she's like, I don't really want to fight you, but if we're going to fight, I'm just going to destroy you. Then she beats Mizuki, and then they come back and they have a more sort of like, okay, we're just going to wrestle. You know, we've done this before. It was just sort of like the behavior of someone who's never wrestled. Like if Yuka had never wrestled Mizuki and was like, I don't really want to do this. It's like, it's happened before. It's not like this is a new thing.
I think it's because Yuka is like at the height of her powers now and is like stronger than she's ever been. Because like it's clearly this is a part of it. Like she's been going out there and just murdering people. So like I think that's what the ideal is, or what the idea is, that she's just going out there and fighting as absolutely hard as she can. And I think she just wasn't sure if she could fight that way with Mizuki, and then until she discovered, yes, I can beat the shit out of this girl.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about it that way. That's sort of more understandable to me. It just sort of, to me, I mean, the other thing to me was that this sort of attitude and also her being like, can I do this? I don't know, makes it sort of seem like it's like, yeah, well, Mizuki won, but she sort of won against someone who was pulling her punches a little bit, even if it wasn't the whole match.
She was like pulling her punches initially, but by a little ways into the match, she was not pulling her punches anymore.
But I guess the whole thing is, like, the whole match is the whole match. Like, if she goes to the outside and drops her on that, you know, on the outside, which she ended up not doing... Like, yeah, that's earlier in the match, but sort of in kayfabe, that would have probably been a big difference maker in the whole match.
They should. I think that was a missed opportunity to go back and then have her do it.
Because I was like, oh, she didn't do it. And even though then later she was like, okay, I'm going to do these strikes. It was like, yeah, well, you didn't do that before.
Yeah, and no, she should have definitely taken her out of the ring later in the match and dumped her on the floor to kind of pay that off.
I mean, I think of any match that was hurt by the crowd, this match was hurt worst by the crowd. I mean, multiple moments when I was like, no one is making a sound. Like, this is like a huge match. Mizuki, who has been trying to win this title forever, two partners facing off against each other. One is Yuka Sakazaki, who is like beloved by many people. And it felt like a crowd that was like watching two people they had never seen before. And so,
yeah, it was a weird vibe. Like, it was definitely strange.
And just the whole thing to me, I think the end really hurt it for me, where I was like, oh, like they counted to three and I was sort of like, oh, Mizuki won. And I was like sort of happy, but it was a feeling of sort of like unexpected.
Yes. You know,
I was like, the moment should have felt like, you know, build, and like, boom, and I've done it. And like, here I am. I've tried four times to win this title. I haven't done it. And now I have done it and I'm here. And it felt just sort of like, oh, the match ended.
It felt like there should have been another 2-3 minutes to the match.
And I don't know if it's one of those things, you know, we've talked about on the show, the sort of Ring of Honor principle of like, you missed the really ideal time to do this, which I don't know when that was, but just sort of at the end, like someone who, I love Mizuki, I think she's really great. I mean, I really like Yuka too. But like, I was like, wow, I feel like I should be slightly more excited for this. And I am just sort of like, oh, cool.
Yeah, no, it was not the level of excitement I was expecting, and I don't know if it is just that it's too late, or if it's more, I don't know if it was the right time, because like, Yuka's been on a great run. I don't know if she should have lost here.
But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, but now you know, everyone who's, you know, she is on a great, I think she's having great matches. But, you know, everyone was always saying, oh, you know, Tokyo Joshi, they know. And it's like, maybe the time was before, but you didn't do it before. So now you have to do it.
Yeah.
And now it's actually a bad time because Yuka is doing so well. But it's like, you painted yourself in that corner by not having her win before.
It was very much a case of you didn't have to book this match here.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was the right match to book. The fact that Mizuki didn't have the title, I think the company maybe waited to put this match on because they wanted it to be, you know, because we had talked about a number of months ago putting this on the 1-4 show and having her win there and like kick it off. But I think they wanted it in a bigger venue. But then you sort of look at it, and I know that Korakuen is not at full, you know, capacity or whatever, but essentially you ran this match on top and you drew like a pretty solid Korakuen number of 1500 people.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, great. And you know, I don't know what happens. We now have three new title holders. It's possible they go off and they've, you know, they're going to have a number of other big shows this year, which they announced on this show. And, you know, maybe we're like, oh, it's great. And Mizuki starts having matches and the matches are really good, which I'm sure they will be. And, you know, we forget about this, but it was just a thing. And I'm talking about all this as if I was like, the match was 2 stars. I hated it. But I was like 3.5. You know, I thought it was a solid match, but there was just so much that was like, just sort of weird vibes to me. And I was sort of like, I was almost like distracted the whole time thinking like, what is this? You know, what's this? And then it sort of ended and I was like, oh, okay, it was a good, but I at no point was like, wow, I'm really enjoying this. I'm really getting into it. So yeah, just sort of a strange end to the show, which I think sort of gave the whole show. You know, I remember watching through, finishing the Aja Kong Yuki Arai match and being like, okay, there hasn't really been anything that's blown me away at this point, but these top three matches should be really good. And you know, if the top three matches had all been like 4.25 to me, I would have been like, this is a great show. because the undercard was solid. You know, I liked the number of matches, the Hyper Masao match, the Neo Bushikigun match. I liked the Mocha Ryo Mizunami match. But it's like, then the top of the card is this sort of strange main event, a tag title match that I also couldn't really get into, and one really good match, but it's like, that's the only match that I really got into on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's, I expect better of big Tokyo Joshi shows than this. It was still good, but not as good as it could have been.
It feels like they have every one of their big shows. I feel like I've ended it being like, oh, you know, I thought the last big show was good, but this one might have been even better. Like, wow, I can't believe it. And this is the first one that I can remember when I was like, nope, this one is no. Like, this mm-hmm. is not better than the last, you know, Wrestle Princess, for example.
Yeah, no, I'd totally agree with that.
So that was Tokyo Joshi's Grand Princess 23. What else has been happening in the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling? Stardom having a pretty quiet last 2 weeks. They did have a Korakuen Hall show on March 10th. Reno won the Future of Stardom number one contender match over Hina and Miyu Amasaki. On the same show, Amisore defeated Lady C to retain the Future of Stardom title. And in the main event, Nanae Takahashi and Yu defeated Natsuka Tora and Ruaka to retain the Goddesses of Stardom title. Seedling had a show just a few days ago, Arisa Nakajima defending her Beyond the Sea title against Ayame Sasamura, and Riku Kaiju defending the Princess of Pro Wrestling title against Misa Kagura. Oz had a show on March 12th, Ryo Mizunami and Sona Kokado defeating Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu to win the tag titles, the first of many tag titles in the last 2 weeks in Joshi. Itsuki Aoki also defeated Riko Kaiju to become the number one contender for the Oz open weight title. As we talked about a little earlier, Tokyo Joshi actually did have a show on March 6th that saw the debut of Shino Suzuki and Toga there on that show. In Sendai Girls, Maya Yukihi and Sayori Ano became the number one contenders for the tag titles by beating Miyuki Takase and Mika Wada. However, they lost that tag team title challenge to Team 200 Kilogram, the team of Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu. Ice Ribbon had a big Korakuen Hall show, one of their limited Korakuen Hall shows for the year. Hamako Hoshi and Makoto defeating Hikaru Shida and Ibuki Hoshi to win the tag titles, and Totoro Satsuki defeating Sayori Ano to win the Ice Infinity title. Also in Ice Ribbon news, Nao Ishikawa announced that she is going to be leaving the promotion at the end of the month. Some controversy there as she made some comments in her departure about some higher ups in the company. And Asahi is going on loan for 3 to 6 months to Actress Girl. So Ice Ribbon continues to absolutely shed wrestlers at an alarming rate. We haven't talked much about Ice Ribbon this year because it seems like a promotion, sadly, on the downswing, but we will see what happens there.
And in all honesty, I rarely see those shows turn up anymore.
They don't really have that many. You know, they cut back on the number of Korakuen Hall shows. They run a number of shows in their dojo that they put on YouTube, which I've actually started watching, and I enjoy those shows. They're pretty simple. You know, they usually only have a handful of matches, and they're usually only about an hour and a half long. Very easy to sort of throw on. You know, sometimes I fast forward through some of the exits and entrances, but you know, they have some solid, you know, the problem is people keep leaving. They have some solid talent. You know, Sayori Ano was very good. You know, they had Shida, Ibuki Hoshi, I've really always liked. They have a number of people, but, you know, they keep losing everyone. First of all, they're not going to have anyone left. But it just seems like a promotion heading the wrong way, which is a bummer, I know, to us, because we really like them and wish they were doing better.
Yeah.
In Diana, Kaho Kobayashi and Kaori Yonayama defeated the luminous duo of Miyuki Takase and Haruka Umasaki to win the tag titles there. In Wave, Ikudo Hidaka and Itsuki Aoki defeated Galaxy Punch, Saki, and Hikari Shimizu, longtime tag champions there, to win the tag titles. And Hikaru Shida defeated Iger to retain the Regina the Wave title. Kelly, what has been happening in the world of Choco Pro?
Choco Pro celebrated their 300th show with 2 days of shows. So Choco Pro 300, day one, the highlights of that one were Tei Hanma defeating Sayaka Obahiro in a pretty good match that started slow, but like turned into a strike battle that was kind of just a battle of respect between these two, and I ended up liking that one a lot. And then in the main event of that show, the Asia Dream tag titles were on the line, with Chris Brooks and Masahiro Takanashi successfully defending the titles against Chie Koshikawa and Sayaka. I originally, when I started writing my notes on this match, I just put down like, oh, this match picked up down the stretch. And then what I thought was the closing stretch, there was still like 2/3 of the match left to go, and they just went nuts for those last 2/3. It felt like a Choco Pro of old match. It was very good. It felt like the first year of that stuff. Chie and Sayaka, and particularly Sayaka, had great showings here, standing up to the stronger bullies that are CDK. Chris Brooks is just so good at being a shithead heel. Just fantastic in that role, and the crowd was super hot for this match. I mean, obviously it's not a big venue, but the crowd was going nuts for stuff. It was awesome. I went 4.25 on that one. Definitely recommend checking it out. Day two, I didn't think was as good. The only really match of note that was on that one was Mochi Natsume defeating Mei Tsuruga. Really good back and forth match with a cool finish. Happy 300 to Choco Pro. And then some other stuff, Choco Pro adjacent. There was a Baka Gaijin and Friends 3 show that was headlined by Chris Brooks defeating Maya Yukihi in a quite frankly incredible match in this bar on these tiny mats. Taylor, you saw this one, didn't you?
Yeah, we both saw it, and I think we both went the same, right? You went 4.5?
Yes.
Yes, I did as well.
Yeah, just awesome, awesome match. They decided to go out there and just have like a high caliber super worker main event in this bar, and it was fucking awesome. I can't recommend this match enough. On their website, on their YouTube, they have the full show up, but they also clipped this match out in its own video file. So if this is all you want to see, you can just go there. I think it's only like 15 minutes. But goddamn, is it good. Highly recommended. I also went 4.5 stars on a match from the Prominence show on the 18th, where Masashi Takeda beat Suzu Suzuki in her continuing deathmatch trial series. I thought this was a very good follow-up to their match from last year. It was a different match. It was cool. It really felt like they built on the story of last year, where Takeda was kind of just this unstoppable killer, like a Jason or a Michael Myers type, where it was like his victory was inevitable and he was kind of just toying with Suzu the whole time. Whereas this time, Suzu's grown a lot in the past year, and she got in a ton of offense on this one. And there was a couple times where I thought she had the match locked up. So it was cool. It was really nice to see her kind of be able to get in that offense on Takeda after he had just destroyed her in the previous match. really good, a lot of near falls, a lot of great action. Probably the best Suzu match that she's had in prominence in a while. Definitely go check this one out. It just got uploaded to YouTube. Like I said, I went 4.5 stars on this one as well. So a lot of good stuff this past couple of weeks.
Good stuff the past 2 weeks. And what's coming up in the next 2 weeks? Stardom. A lot of shows here on March 25th. New Blood Premium. Getting that premium blood.
Oh, great.
And on this show, Han and Hina versus Saeeda and Momoko Go versus Rina and Ruaka.
Oh, that's that premium match right there.
That's what they're talking about. The next match, Waka Tsukiyama and Tom Nakano will take on Nanai Takahashi and Kairi in a match where if Waka loses, she will not only leave Cosmic Angel, she will leave Stardom completely. Kelly, I always ask you, this might be the last time I ever ask you, does Waka win?
No. There's not a chance she wins here and beats either Takahashi or Kairi. All right, what happens if they go to a draw? Is she safe?
No, I think she has to win.
Oh, shit. No, she's gone.
I think they mentioned that because I think the whole thing is she needs to win the match.
She's not gonna pin either of these two.
You don't think she's gonna pin Nanai? She's gonna go and then knock her out. I don't know.
Just hits her in the head with a fucking hammer or something.
Maybe she turns heel and she freaking goes nuts on everyone.
You know. Tom is kind of gone heel in this Julia feud. She's very much the heel who does not realize she's the heel, it feels like. So, hell, maybe Waka will go down that road, too.
Well, we will have to see. Also on the show, two of the new rookies debuting. Sakura Ishiguro will take on Julia in a singles match. Hanako and Lady C will take on Micah and Himika. The third rookie match was replaced because of injury. We'll talk about that in a second. Miyu Amasaki will take on Shuri. And then in the semifinals of the New Blood Tag Title Tournament, Mai Sakurai and Chen Yoda will face off against Starlight Kid and Karma, while on the other side, Mirai and Tomoka Inaba will face Amisore and Nanami. Then there will also be the tag finals on the same show. Kelly, who do you think emerges as the first ever inaugural New Blood Tag Team Champions?
It's got to be Mai Sakurai and award winner Chan Yoda.
Oh, see, I don't know that I was going to say I think it's going to be Mirai and Tomoka Inaba.
I mean, yeah, realistically, that's who it's going to be.
but just want it to be.
Yeah, I think Rossi is going to say, you know what? I told those sponsors to go pound sand. I'm pushing this girl to the moon.
And then the replacement for the third rookie match will be a mysterious singles match between Super Strong Stardom Big Machine and Sexy Dynamite Princess.
Okay, so that's who is this going to be? Is it Satnam Singh versus who?
Well, I am thrown off. I was thrown off by the word dynamite in the name of the princess. But I'm like, would they do that? I don't think they would.
Gotta be Hoshi Tango. Satnam Singh versus Hoshi Tango coming to you. New Blood Premium.
That's what they're talking about when they're talking about premium.
Yep. So get them premium man honkers. Slapping against each other. Let's go.
The very next day, Hoshi Tango will not be there. It will be the Cinderella tournament.
Man, he'd fill out a dress great.
Let me tell you, this show has a lot of matches. Ready? Here we go.
Sure does.
Utami versus Nanai, Micah versus Momo Watanabe, Julia versus Mai Sakurai, Azumi versus Hazuki, Mariah May versus Rina, Shiri versus Tomoka Inaba, Momo Kogo versus Saki Kashima, Saya Kamatani versus Mayu Iwatani, Lady C versus X, Starlight Kid versus Haruka Umasaki, Ami Sore versus Yuna Mizumori, Tom Nakano versus Himika, Natsuko Tora versus Raka, Mirai versus Hanan, Saya Ida versus Miyu Amasaki, Natsupoi versus Mina Shirakawa, Koguma versus Tekla, and Hina versus Double X. Whew. All right. Kelly, who do you think's winning this tournament?
I'm gonna go Double X.
Oh, Double X, you coward. I'm gonna go Dark Horse, and I'm gonna say Mariah May is winning the tournament.
You know what? Fuck it. Why not?
I mean, they seem to really like her.
Yeah. There's some cool matches in this first round.
My hot take is the match is either one that I have absolutely no interest in watching, or it's a match that I think is really cool and very good.
Yeah. Like Azumi versus Hazuki? Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here, like Shuri versus Tomoka Inaba? That should be very good. Yeah. Am I interested
Utami versus Nanae? Yeah.
Am I interested in Momo Kogo versus Saki Kashima? Not
particularly. Certainly not.
Am I interested in Natsuko Tora versus Ruwaka? No.
Nope. But you know what? That's a cool match if you like either of those people.
Yeah. Starlight Kid, Haruka, ladies. Who knows who X will be, or Double X?
Maybe it's Karma.
Also, so this is 18 matches. Because there are 36, there are 36 participants. I should also say that the winner of Mirai and Hanan and the winner of the winner of Mariah versus Rina will have one less match because, of course, 32 is the even number. For doing
okay.
This.
One less match 36. For Mariah May to lose, then.
That's right. So this may be a lengthy show. Now, I know these matches are really short, but there's 18 of them.
Yeah.
Like, if each match takes, and I'm talking like entrances, stuff like that, if they take 5 minutes each. If each match with entrances, introductions, leaving the ring, and wrestling the match, if each match was only 5 minutes, this is an hour and a half long show.
I mean, that sounds great.
Yes, but that requires each match in ring time to be about 45 seconds.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm into that. Let's do that show. That sounds fun.
Anyway, if you watch these 18 matches and you think, boy, I wish I could have seen more than 18 matches, I have good news for you. On April 1st and 2nd will be the second round, third round, and quarterfinals of the Cinderella tournament. The April 1st show will be the second round, which will be 9 matches. And the third round and quarterfinals will be however many. I can't do math. Anyway, it won't be 18 matches again. And that's what's happening in Stardom. What else is happening? Tokyo Joshi obviously going to be part of the WrestleMania weekend. Tokyo Joshi live in Los Angeles. Want a preview of that show? Well, here's a great idea. I'll be previewing it in the big annual Voices of Wrestling WrestleMania preview audio, which will be coming out very soon. I'll be reviewing it or previewing it with Rich Krejci. I also believe I will be doing a written preview for the show. So keep your eyes peeled for those two things. And give those a listen. Usually when I do those big WrestleMania preview audios, I only pick the scuzziest indies with the weirdest people on them, and I'm legitimately excited to actually do a show that I am looking forward to.
Wow, and Kelly just gets to go kick rocks.
Yeah, and if you want to hear Kelly's voice, tweet at him.
Yeah, ask me send you the preview. Yeah. And I'll be like, I don't fucking know the card.
Yeah.
I don't have the card on my notes. There's no notes to... There's no card right here. I can't give you any hot takes on this right now. I don't know. Like, what's the card? It's going to be Miyu Yamashita versus Sting in the main event. That's my guess. Sting's going to win. So,
such a good preview that he'll give you the wrong matches.
Yeah.
But maybe then you'll make me look good.
Yeah, I'm going to sneak onto the call.
Yeah,
I'm gonna catfish Rich into thinking that I'm you, and he's gonna give me the link. Just wait, I'm gonna change my name and my picture in the Slack to what you have. He'll never see it coming.
Well, that's good, because if people don't like the preview audio, I'll blame it on you.
That's true. You hear that, Rich? I'm gonna catfish you.
Anyway. What else is coming up? Ice Ribbon has a show on April 1st. Sayori Inoue versus Ibuki Hoshi, and Makoto and Hamako Hoshi will be making their first defense of their newly won tag titles against the Just Tap Out team of Misa Kagura and Yanagawa. So that those are two fun matches, and that is everything coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi's, a lot of Stardom content. So Kelly and I will be deep into Stardom life next time.
Stardom world. We'll be deep into the Stardom world.
That's true. And that is all for this show. Kelly, I hand it over to you for the traditional end of show speech.
So I'm thinking about how I'm going to do my own Tokyo Joshi preview with Joe from Voices of Wrestling, and how much everyone's going to hate it, including myself, probably. But yeah.
Great. So look out
he's,
for
he
that.
Said he's doing shows, so we'll put him to the test and be like, you got to talk about Tokyo Joshi with me.
I'm sure it will be audio that everyone will love to listen to.
Everyone's going to love it. I think we'll have a great time. But Kelly's movie recommendation of the week. I watched The Lake on Amazon. The Lake is a Taiwanese movie, I believe. It is a giant monster movie. And really the best thing about it is that it uses a practical effects giant monster that looks cool as hell. There is a lot of other stuff about this movie that is not very good. The script isn't very good. The acting's fine. The ending of the movie doesn't make much sense. But when they do the giant fucking monster that looks like the T-Rex kind of stuff in the original Jurassic Park, it's real cool. It's very cool effect on how they do that big-ass giant monster in real life. So I commend them on that. That was awesome. If you're a giant monster movie fan, it's worth checking out just for that. It was well worth the $6.99 rental, I think it was.
Well, that is Kelly's movie recommendation of the week, and that is all for us here at Jumping Bomb Audio. I almost said that's all for everyone here at Tokyo Joshi Pro. We don't work for the company. But anyway...
I've been Rika Tatsumi. This is Maki Ito. You've been listening to the Jumping Bomb Tokyo Joshi Pro Show.
Yes. But anyway, I have been Taylor for Kelly. Thank you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives. It's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.